It's easy to get lost. This is The Revenue Maze, and I'm Valerie Cobb. Join me as we navigate the halls, dead ends, and U-turns on your path towards upward growth trajectory. The Revenue Maze is sponsored by Revenue North Star, guidance and execution through fractional revenue leadership, uncovering hidden revenues, and empowering small business growth through process-driven sales customized to your company environment. Welcome, everybody, to another great episode of The Revenue Maze. I am super, super excited about this guest today. I'm excited about all of them, but this one is really, really fun as well. And I certainly look forward to these each week. One thing that's super cool is he and I have in common that we're both anything single racket sports fans. So I just love that. And we'll talk about that a little bit. He loves karaoke, anything Taylor Swift. He did in college want to be a venture capitalist, but always wanted to live in San Francisco. So San Francisco was it. It won out. He started this company right out of college. And I want to welcome co-CEO Kashish Gupta.
Hey, Valerie, thanks for having me on the show today. Super pumped.
Well, it's going to be a fun show. And we always kind of bring guests on that have such practical knowledge on how to help all the small business founders, owners figure out how to get out of the revenue maze. So what's one thing that you can tell listeners and viewers that will help them get out of the revenue maze?
One thing I think about a lot, especially as Hutch just scaled, is really giving your bets enough time to pan out. So there's something scientific about trying a bet one at a time and validating whether that's going to work or not work. And the most important thing I can say is disvalidating bets is actually much more important than validating bets. And because we're all operator owners, we all have optimism, right? We're all hopeful that the bet's going to work out. And so we keep pumping gas into it, hoping that it's going to work out. But sometimes the best use of time is just put enough effort into it to disvalidate it and then move on to the next thing so you can spend your time in a more focused way.
Yeah, I love that. And so you do, you learn a ton about what's not working and get done quickly with what is not working, right? But we are hopeful. We're human beings, right? We're hopeful. We think, oh my gosh, everything is going to work out. So at the end of the day, give us a few pointers on how you've been able to curb that. Or are you just like superhuman where you just kind of go, okay, I know I'm hopeful. I'll do 1, 2, 3 and we will qualify it quickly and get out of it quickly. So give us some tips.
Yeah. So I guess a few things. When we first started our company, we had a few criteria for what we felt like a good business would be. And this primarily applies to more typical B2B SaaS type businesses, not anyone like selling physical goods or selling B2C. But for us, it was that the business should be something that you can market and get inbound leads for. So we didn't want to build a business that would require a ton of expensive outbound sales. That was one. Two is we wanted to sell something to folks that could both buy the thing and use the thing. So we didn't want to sell something super tops down that then had to like delegate out to some engineering team to implement. So we wanted that cycle of conversation to implementation to be very quick.
Okay.
And then three, we wanted that tool to be as close to what I would call like revenue as possible. So we wanted to help our customers make money, not save money. And so these were our three criteria, and we had tons of pivots. So HiTouch is actually not the first business idea we've worked on. It's the sixth business idea we've worked on. But each of our pivots were because of customer feedback and because of us eventually realizing that one of these three criteria were not true. And so we moved on to the bigger and better business until we finally landed on our current business.
That's kind of cool. And how did you kind of know, so did you put some milestones that said if it's not after you've A-B tested and if it doesn't hit a certain whatever ranking, through customer feedback. How did you do that? Because I think that that's what some of us get stopped on. I mean, you have companies that go from being good to great to nothing years later, right? And then you have companies that have a race to the start and they do well at first and then they just kind of fizzle. So how do you kind of, I would say, balance the hope that you were talking about and those bets, you know, with what kind of system or process did you put in play to do that? Because I know that that's a problem for a lot of those that are listening.
Yeah, I wish I had a better, like, more structured system to talk about. But a lot of it was qualitative. So a couple things that are relevant here is, if you are worried about like how like time actually affects your business and how over time it might get weaker or stronger, it is worthwhile playing out two things. One, how does the strength of my buyer change over time? So say I'm selling to a data buyer versus an IT buyer. Are data teams getting more powerful over time? Are IT teams getting more powerful over time? Those kinds of things. So how does your buyer change over time? And then the other is really like, as your customers mature, are they going to grow into your product and use it more and more? Or are they going to grow out of your product and maybe switch to something more enterprise grade? And so the second of those, the fact that one of our past businesses that we were working on, we had this exact sentiment that there's a ton of demand for this business, but only for SMBs. So SMBs love our product. They want to use it now. As soon as they mature into enterprises or even like mid-market businesses, they're going to grow out of our product and they're not going to use it. So that was a criteria for us to actually say, we're not going to build that business anymore. We have this other option of building only for the enterprise and letting everyone in the market grow into our solution rather than grow out of it. So we kind of chose the path of, we can't sell to everyone. We have to choose enterprise or mid-market, and let's choose enterprise as our North Star and what we're going to build for. So that's just one example, and there's probably a lot of those kinds of examples I can share. But it might even be useful for, I don't know, would it be useful for the group to hear kind of what we work on? That way we can paint some context.
You can definitely. This is interviewing you for this tip. So it, of course it would be great for context. I think it's very translatable. So yeah, definitely. Cool. Share a little bit.
Yeah, so our product is called High Touch. We are a data activation platform. So we just help anyone that has data in their company use that data for sales and marketing. So pretty much every business has some database with their customer data, and their marketers would love to get their hands on that data in order to send more personalized emails or more personalized ad campaigns. And so we very simply sync that data into your marketing tools. That way your marketers can use that data. And we have like a whole array of offerings that help you do this either via SQL, which is more for the data folks, or via point and click, which is for the marketing folks. And we have tons of Fortune 500 companies like PetSmart, GameStop, other really large B2C brands that are using our product to run their entire marketing stack.
And I can see why.
Yeah, so like the relevant piece there was, in this journey, we had the option of selling to marketing folks or to data folks. And we had the option of focusing on the smaller companies that had data versus the bigger companies that had data. And so one thing I'll leave listeners with is, the question of what can I do is very different from the question of what should I do.
Yes.
And many businesses are blessed with being able to target tons of different types of customers. And the hardest piece is deciding which ones to focus on.
You kind of hit the nail on the head, because we tend to chase sometimes shiny objects. I mean, working in several different companies, each company has to begin to make decisions about what they should be doing. And that's a very big distinction. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because there are times when we're working through growth strategies, it's like, well, you can do complementary, geographical, you can do all these things. And in the life cycle, like you said, you could pivot many, many times, right? But at the end of the day, it will boil down to what your superpowers and should be focusing and honing on to protect your company. There's a lot of things besides just the data portion. I mean, as a co-CEO, I'm sure you know that you kind of go, well, also, what do we want? And I know people forget that. What do we want? You know, and because you might be that group. I've run into that. It was years ago. It was actually a cold caller. I wanted to promote her because she was so amazing, you know. and I figured she wanted promoted, and she goes, no, because then I have to close the deal.
Wow.
And I never thought about it that way. And she was like, I love it, but I do want to choose who my account exec is that I work with and give my leads to, because she gets, you know, she got certain remuneration based on what that was. And and sometimes it does. It boils down to a little bit, well, what do we want to be, you know? And so it's such an interesting journey that I'm fascinated with. I had somebody on my podcast that does ideation, and in the ideation realm, goes through a lot of that kind of decision trees, but it's almost like blissful when somebody finally lands on what they're going to do. And they go, I don't even have to think about what not to do. If a salesman walks through the door and says, and the customers are all saying this, it's like, no, they're not. Mm-hmm. and no, they're not. Here we go. You know? So how did you, I mean, honestly, you were talking about straight out of college and doing all these startups. How did you, tell us a little bit about how you got here in doing that. I know you wanted in San Francisco. We get that. Although I avoid that airport like the plague. I'm just going to have to say. I've had more layovers in San Francisco that lasted forever. But anyway, tell us a little bit. Well, how did you get there? Why San Francisco, by the way? You wanted to be a VC.
Yeah. So when I graduated college, I had a job offer at one of the top VC firms, Bessemer Venture Partners. And I loved working there. I felt like I could learn a lot over the next few years, but I really didn't want to be in New York. And New York was the only place they hired their junior VCs. Mm. At the time, I had felt that San Francisco was the place I had to be, because I needed to surround myself with folks that wanted to build. Mm. With people that had an innate desire to change the world in some way or create something of their own. And I just felt that being around those people would basically help me skip years of development of learning and be able to become like them. Hmm. So I just took a really strong bet on being in San Francisco, being around builders, and being around people that kind of felt like anything was possible. One thing I noticed about East Coast culture versus West Coast culture is the concept of paying your dues or going through the set path. So in the West Coast, a lot of folks don't really believe in paying your dues. They just believe in, if you think you can do it, then you can do it and you make it happen. And that really resonated with me, because I just don't think I have enough time to do everything I want to do in this world. And so I had that impatience to get started right away. and I think that translates to kind of how I thought about my education and everything before graduating as well. Yeah. I could never really settle for being in business or being in engineering. I had to do both. And that also translated to, after I moved out to the Bay Area, I was searching for a startup to work for and just learn from. And in that process, I had a startup idea that all of my friends had been saying, hey, this idea is really good. I would be your first customer. In fact, I'll get my entire company to use your product. And they had kept pushing me to take the plunge and just go for it. And that's ultimately why I started the original business, which we have now pivoted onwards from. The original business was a travel business. And we've since then moved on to a completely different business in the data space. But that initial motivation and initial push from friends saying, hey, this business makes a lot of sense and we will be your first customers, is really what started it all. And after that point, my strong belief is that folks with the right motivation and slope can learn how to figure things out rather than having the experience. So I don't really think there's any set of experiences that make you fit to be a founder. I think it really comes down to how quickly you can learn. And ultimately, the person that has the challenge in front of them is the one that's going to learn and overcome that challenge. If you don't put yourself in the challenging seat, you're not going to learn and overcome the challenge. And so at that point, we really just got lucky that we started a business that had the customer demand that we built out, that we raised money for, that we then pivoted and got better customer feedback to build a new business.
Yeah. Yeah. So you unpacked a lot in there. First off, I love the humble roots that kind of come through saying, hey, I could jumpstart this by being around the builders, the ones that have done this, and I can learn really quickly and jumpstart this, to then say that if you have the will, you can learn the skill. And it's motivational in order to make sure that you get to that point. And some people don't learn that in a lifetime. You know, you have those who put the hand up and they're like, no, I'm not going to blend those two. I'm this, I'll figure it out and move on. And then you have those who will just kind of go, well, I don't have that skill, period. So I can't do that. And I love the can do sort of mentality that you have with it, and putting yourself, I love that you were willing to put yourself in a position that would be where you found your desires. Instead of staying in New York, you're like, you know, yeah. And sometimes you find that it's like, this is how we do this. This is the steps. This is, you know, and I grew up in Southern California. So it's that same kind of mentality of, oh yeah, I can do it. I have no idea why I can't do it. I call myself, I call myself the laboratory retriever with the tongue hanging out going, yeah, I can do this. You know? thing. And then it's like, oh wow, that was a little harder than I thought. You know. But that's admirable for sure. And so name somebody who was an inspiration to you that taught you that, because that's not something that everybody just out of the gate does, right?
Yeah, I mean, I could name so many different people actually.
Okay.
What I'm mostly pointing at is there's a large group of people in San Francisco that kind of dropped out of college. Mm-hmm. And they didn't feel like the degree was necessary to be able to build something great. Mm-hmm. And they had that same impatience to take the leap and build something now. So a close friend of mine, for example, Nikhil Baduma, he has a healthcare company. He finished up his degree at MIT in a year and a half. Mm-hmm. Moved out to the Bay Area, started a healthcare company. And I think he was maybe probably around 20 years old when he started it, maybe 19 years old.
Yeah.
And that's just one of the many examples I can cite for folks that don't really care about constraints. Mm-hmm. This will get a little bit philosophical, but I'm like just a believer that constraints don't really exist. Almost every single one of those constraints is fabricated by us humans or us people, right? Like, mm-hmm. Society doesn't have those inherent constraints. They're created by us. And so when you actually peel back the onion and you think, what can I do and not do? There aren't that many things in the professional world that you can't do. I'm not talking about breaking laws, but just in the professional world, there's very little that we don't have access to if we kind of set our minds to it.
Yeah, I'm a sci-fi geek, so I have always felt like there was no constraints, you know?
Yeah.
And I've talked about this before, doing a presentation and calling it So Long Palm, because it was the whole turn of the Apple and the iPhone and all the things that kind of changed. Some mind-blowing perception, but the reality is, even in science, it's only a theory till it's proven not to, right? So, I mean, you say it's there, but there are several technologies way back in the whole, yes, I'm a Trek fan too. I'm kind of weird. But anyways, no, I do not dress up and go to those kinds of Halloween, yes, but you know, that kind of thing. But anyways, I always thought it was fascinating. Wouldn't it be great if we could just be there like a cat? Just all of a sudden over there, right? You know, beam you up. And there has been things that have been being worked on for that, and food replication, and just ways to challenge it. So a lot of it is our perception of what is. I was a huge fan of The Gods Must Be Crazy. It's an old film and it just cracks me up. But this Coke bottle falls from the sky in Africa. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but anyway, literally it's from their perception, it's caused all the problems.
Mm-hmm.
and they have literally gone to the end of the, sent this little guy to the end of the world to get rid of this Coke bottle to solve the problems. You know? And it's just hysterical, but it is that sort of that perception that sometimes limits us completely, you know? So anyways, I love that. Well, so tell us a little bit about where somebody could reach you if they were trying to test their limitations or get a hold of hightouch.io.
Yeah. Super easy to reach me. My email is kashish@hightouch.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn or Twitter. Twitter, it's kashgupta_. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm very, very happy to like kind of help other folks that are starting up, working on their companies and helping them think through their businesses. Really, like the revenue maze, it's quite like fascinating because in the moment, it always feels like there's a path forward. But then on a macro level, so many startups don't make it. And especially in this market, we're seeing more and more of those startups not making it. And it's starting to become even more clear like what the patterns are that predict that success and don't. And I think like the biggest one I can point to that might be helpful to think about is like, what, it's like what you said, right? Like what is good enough? Like what level of customer feedback should be classified as good enough for this to be the business we work on or just okay? And that's why it's really important to distinguish between positive feedback and feedback that is like qualifying. So qualifying for this business to be the one I want to work on. Part of that requires you to have a lot of ego that my time is really very worthwhile and I'm only going to spend it on the business. That's the moonshot. The other part of it is just really rigor and skepticism on what kind of business can have 10,000 customers rather than 1,000 customers, which is wildly different. It only seems like a 10x, but a TAM of 1,000 customers versus 10,000 or 100,000 is wildly different. You can sort of sense that when you have your initial customer interviews. For example, you talk to 10 customers, five of them are interested, that's very high. If only one of them are interested sometimes, then that's pretty low, right? So like it's important to keep doing discovery until you find what really smells like pull, not just an I can do this, but like I should.
Yeah, yeah. I'm very data driven. I 100% agree with a lot of what you're saying on the customer, getting the customer feedback and deciding what's qualifying for sure and why you should listen for some of that. So it's excellent feedback. It's a great reminder. I'm going to take 2 to 3 of your nuggets and go into some of the other companies that I'm working with and, because I'm going into high involvement planning with some of them for the upcoming year to plan out the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. Always hone in on that 1 year and top down, bottom up, kind of sandwiching. And it's a good reminder and to get people to say, well, what are the qualifiers? Because it could be a lot of noise of other things. So, yeah. I think it's great. And I'm glad that you're willing to help others in their startups. I know that that can be a lonely place sometimes. You're a co-CEO, so it sounds like you've got some help a little bit and some support. Some feel a bit lonely. Let's just... And yeah, the other is business failure, startup failure is huge, right? There's a lot of great ideas that don't make it to the market because of it. And so gleaning on some of that advice to help is a sage response for sure. So anyways, well, thank you so much. Just literally so much for being on the show. And we've got the horn from San Francisco in the background. So yes, he really is in San Francisco. It's not his garage. And so anyways, thank you again, Kashish Gupta, for being on the show.
Thanks, Valerie.
Thank you all for joining another great episode. Hats off to all you small businesses out there. I can't wait for the next episode.